Welcome to the Spirit Aligned Legacy Leadership Program, Legacy Leader Podcast. Today we are speaking with Circle One Legacy Leader Barbara Poley at Hopevilla, Arizona, from a September 2020 interview with Julie Cajun. Beginning is just visiting.
Hesquext, good morning. Stemplu Luaspuus. Barbara, I extend my contemporary greetings. Hesquext, good morning. And our traditional Salish greeting, Stemplu Luaspuus, what's in your heart? I'm so happy to be with you today. My name is Julie Cajun, and I'm a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes in Montana. And I get the privilege to work for the Spirit Aligned Leadership Program and connect with these remarkable legacy leaders and hear their stories and learn about their life, work, and their community. And today, it's my honor to speak with one of the program's inaugural legacy leaders, the First Circle, Barbara Poley. Barbara, welcome. It's so good to see you, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Julie. I'm happy to be here this morning. It's when you're preparing for a interview like this, I get a little bit nervous. So in the beginning, I probably will feel nervous and you may feel it, but seeing your smiling face right now, I know other people won't see it at this time, but when you smile, you speak with that smile. So that's how I'm going to try to do my presentation.
Okay. Well, I'm smiling. I'm so happy to be with you. And for those who haven't had the good fortune to get to your beautiful country and to visit with you in person, and we're having to do this via Zoom, can you take some time to just share a little bit about your background, your family, and where you are right now? Kind of give us a little picture of who you are and where you are.
Okay, thank you. I come from two tribal memberships. I have to say my mother is Laguna from New Mexico, and my father is Hopi from the Hopi Reservation. Having been born into two tribal memberships, as many of us are, in my early years, we are taught from both sides. And so being taught how the Laguna is supposed to act or in public or with the family, and the Hopi being taught, I feel I've been double exposed to learning how to be a good person. So I do feel good about that. I had my grandparents who lived probably about 2 miles from where my family lived. My father, being Hopi, his background of training had been finishing high school up to the 10th grade in California. My mother's background is finishing up to the 8th grade in a Catholic school in Ganado on the Navajo Reservation. And so with the two backgrounds and the two different languages, they did not have the opportunity to spend the time learning each other's languages. And so only English was spoken in my home. During that time, my parents also felt those years were important to train their children to speak English, to be able to do well in education in the school system. That was their priority. And so we were not taught either language. I do know some basic Hopi and, the greeting words, Hopi and Laguna. But that was their choice. Mm-hmm. And I used to feel in my younger years that I was left out because I didn't learn either language. Mm-hmm. But what I did learn was, and it's probably just as good as learning the language, is what the values mean from both sides, and they're pretty similar. So learning the values has become really important in my life, and re-teaching others about values, because I didn't realize how much I was already teaching values during my work time. It was just the way I handled the people, the staff that I had, the relatives that I met with. Those were all values that my parents and grandparents taught me. My Hopi grandparents could not speak English. We would come to the Hopi Reservation and visit. The Hopi Reservation from my birthplace, which is Winslow, Arizona, is about 100 miles. Mm-hmm. And in those early years, we only had dirt roads coming out to the reservation. But it was the best time. We would visit maybe every 3 months or so if we could. But on dirt roads, and the small truck that I remember coming in, you got to sit in the back and be nice and dusty when you got to the place. It's a good thing we didn't worry about needing so much water at that time. But the things I remember about coming to Hopi to visit my Hopi grandparents was my grandmother, who had some kind of back problem that she never took care of. So she was like bent over, and she used a little stool to get herself around the house. She never went to the hospital to get that taken care of. But she would make the best biscuits, and she knew about what time we'd show up. So you could smell it coming in the door. And so she'd have that ready for us. Mm-hmm. And a big smile. And her greeting in Hopi. But that was, you know, that was something that I think some of us who have to try to work with people who don't speak English, at least I learned how to communicate with my grandparents in a way that I felt loved, and I hope I showed them love. My grandfather, he would just, he could talk a little bit, and he'd just say, we need to prepare to go out to the orchard, which is a little distance from their home, and we'd have to pick the fruit, because we usually go out there during that time. And he would just be so happy to have a little bit of help to bring in the harvest. So, you know, we did those kinds of things as children. And I'm just remembering these type of things now. It's interesting, because once I started thinking about it, then I really tried to think, what did I do as a child? And I first am remembering the happy times, the really, really happy times of not being able to speak the language. My other grandparents who lived in Winslow near us, they were put out of their area. They were called the Boxcar Lagunas. And by that, the Santa Fe Railroad had made a deal with the Laguna tribe to provide employment to Laguna people in an area where they had a lot of traffic for trains. Mm-hmm. And so they put a lot of Laguna people in Winslow and a few other places around Arizona and California. Mm-hmm. My grandparents came to Arizona. So that's where my grandfather worked. All I had known was we had enough room for a kitchen, for the bathroom, for the two bedrooms. I mean, my grandparents, because my grandfather was a little bit higher on the Santa Fe line, I guess, he got to have at least four boxcars that made a house for the family. The rest of the people who lived down the rows, we call rows, they only had two boxcars. So I came from a rich Laguna family.
But that sounds like you had some remarkable childhood memories, being able to come to Hopi, and Winslow wasn't that far, so that you could do that.
Right. And in those years, the early years, those would be the probably 50s, with roads not being paved, you spend a lot of time on the roads, a lot more time than we do now. We spend an hour going to Winslow, hour and a half going to Flagstaff from Hopi. Mm-hmm. And Hopi, for people who don't know, is located in the northeast part of Arizona. We have if you are able to look at a map and find the location, we are inside a circle that surrounds us by the Navajo land. And there's a long story to that.
I bet there is.
There really is. So Hopis differ from Navajo by the way we live. Hopis lived in clusters. We lived on mesas. So we lived together, really close together in villages. Navajo lives because of their style of having sheep in the early years. They had to roam here and there. So they lived in a lot of different locations surrounding us. But these days I can't remember the miles that we have of Hopi land, but we still remain close together because we do live on three mesas. And first, second, and third mesa. I live on third mesa, and the village I come from is named Bakavi. That is the village of my husband's family. And I just go back on that one because culturally, when you live on Hopi, you are supposed to be moving to your wife's location. Mm-hmm. My location, my family's location is on the, it's still on Third Mesa area, but it was the lower part of the Mesa called Kikotsumabi. That's where most of my blood relatives live. But as I grew up and as my husband and I were finally thinking about really having a home somewhere, I had always told him that I wanted to live higher. I wanted to live on a mesa. And so because he cares and loves me so much, he went to his relatives to see about this request. And it's a request that he probably didn't want to make because he knows the cultural way. But I'm also from a different tribe, and that's probably what he told them. She's from Laguna. So luckily, his aunts at that time talked about it, and they told him there's a orchard where his grandfather used to do a lot of planting, mm-hmm. and it's outside of the village. So they said, if that's a place you want to fix up, then we'll give that to you. And he did look it over, and he's a great farmer. Mm-hmm. Most of the fruit trees were dead in this location. Wow. But we started moving up here, and we've been on in our new location for more than 10 years now. But when we moved here, not only did he do an addition to the trailer we brought here, but he also started looking at the plants that might still be able to live. Mm-hmm. By that, he was able to bring back to life at least four cherry trees. People didn't know we had cherry trees up here. The grapevines, we have a huge grapevine outside. I can't eat them all. I'm always calling people now. Come and help yourself. But with COVID, they can't come into the village as easily. Yeah. So I have to pick them and take them out. But they are so sweet. Peaches, apricots. He revived a lot of the trees surrounding our place. And so I know his grandfather would be thankful for what he has done. Because that's part of the life of Hopi.
Yes. Yeah.
And so living in Bakavi is, it's across the village of Hotbella. And we have one major road going across our reservation, Highway 264. So people can't get lost. They just have to find the village that you tell them to look for them in. So,
right.
You know, if people want to visit me in the future when we have no COVID restrictions, yeah, I do invite them to reach out to me.
Yes. Well, Barbara, you know, you talked about your husband reviving so a lot of these fruit trees and the grapes. And that's pretty remarkable, because I remember when I was there and just in conversations with you, the scarcity of rain. Mm-hmm. And so can you just tell us a little bit about the dry land farming?
Sure.
Explain a little bit about that. You were talking about the harvest this year.
The dry land farming has to do a lot with the religion of the Hopi people. Because they needed food many years back, and they ended up coming to a place of scarce greens that are needed to grow, soil that is presentable in other places, and lack of water. So part of that, I think, was created the emphasis on having our ceremonies that take place, because praying for rain was already there, but receiving help from the clouds or the creator above was even more important, because the rain in our area is only about 8 inches a year.
Wow.
And so the farmers had to find the valleys between the mesas. They learned where the water flowed when we did have rain. And so that's where they set up their fields. And it's not always close by. My husband's field is probably about 6 miles from our home. But he would go there daily, twice a day, morning and evening, when he's planting, when he's caring for the plants to come up. So they do provide prayers after we also have ceremonies for the rains, because the ceremonies begin praying for moisture through our kiva ceremonies that happen in starting probably December. And then we have outside plaza ceremonies with the Kachina dances that we have. And through these spiritual beings, the prayers, the songs for creating the rain, the moisture that we need, that's all in those songs that are being sung. And that's the part that I myself feel left out of, because when you don't know the language, you don't understand what those prayers are about. For me, luckily, I was able to ask my husband mm-hmm. to explain to me the words of those songs that were being sung. And that's how I learned the importance of the songs that they sang. And that's when I started paying more attention mm-hmm. when we were sitting out there in ceremony, to understand that you have to be in a good space to help our spiritual beings pray for the necessity of the moisture for our country. And yeah. So that's, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we had to do for our land area. And we still live here. We still get corn, which is the main item that we grow. It's used for a variety of food menus that we have. But over hundreds of years, we still have the corn coming in and drying the corn so that it can be used for years to come. Right now, we're, you know, in COVID season, yeah. And it's been terrible, and we've had less and less rain. So it's... crops. Some people at different parts of the reservation have a good crop, which is great. And so I know what person I'm going to call on if I need something. Friends of mine, I'll put an emphasis on them. But they do that to me too, and I offer them during the years that they maybe didn't have enough blue corn, white corn. They would call and ask if they could buy some. And for us, we don't sell the corn. And so, but that's the Bahana or white man's way, is to pay for something. We have, those of us who are older, like to continue bartering. So if the other person that I know has some skill that I might need, I would ask them later on, but I would never take money for anything that I gave, especially corn or beans. But the thinking is beginning to change. And I watch that when I look at Facebook and I see the young people asking for things. I want to buy some corn, and it's not simple. People have to begin to recognize how many months it takes to do the planting, to care for the plants, to then do the harvesting. And when you do harvesting, how to put that corn away so that it lasts for years and years to come.
Those are
things that I think we're beginning to lose in our area, because we're not teaching enough. We're not including them enough in the process of what life might sustain us as we need right now.
Barbara shares advice for youth.
You know, as you think about your years of working with young adults, do you have, what would you tell young people is important for them to know?
I would try to advise them to make sure they do spend some time with their elders. They don't have to be really, really old, but they also have uncles and aunts, younger ones. And, ask some questions, because as I grew up, we were taught not to question. Mm-hmm. We were taught to listen. And I think that's why I'm a good listener. But what I learned as I was in the workplace I encountered people who were going for higher education. Mm-hmm. And once they got through their higher education, they were so anxious to do good. And that's a good thing. But some of them have forgotten how to reconnect to elders and how to listen well. Because elders have a lot of good words to say. Listen well and internalize, depending on what your background of education is, your higher education. How does that relate to it? And I think most of our people will recognize that what was done for Hopi, the survival of Hopi, the laws that they developed for themselves were based on simple things to keep people alive, keep people in order. It's a system that was created as most community systems are created. Take care of one another. The whole basic way of living is in the elder's mind, and they won't say it in those same words, but what they will do is tell you a story. And those are the best things to listen to. Ask them, what did you do when you were making a cake? Where did you have to get your product? And I it will help the young ones come back to the thinking about, I just go to a store nearby. I pick up this canned product. I pick up these vegetables that are there. And then they need to look at, how did these things grow? How did these things get put into a can? Because when they start questioning the end product, they start learning about a process that takes place. And I think that's something I was able to do when I had my father, is with him, I was very close. My mother was a person who could teach me how to do the become skilled in cooking and sewing. To this day, those aren't my favorite things to do. But my father was very interested in making sure that I became educated more than him, higher grades than him, so that my chore or my desire from him was to continue teaching others. Don't keep it to yourself. Always make sure you train other people or teach other people to know how to make themselves better. That was what I learned from him. And I had his encouragement to be in school, stay in school. And I remember doing all my work and getting the grades I did. And I was looking through old photographs. So I found my high school diploma and my master's, diploma as well. And it's like, I have my father to thank for that. Because if I didn't think of his words, if I didn't think of after he left us at such a young age, if I didn't think of those early words, I would not have been able to get through all of my higher education. And I am happy to have higher education. And I really feel good about our young people having that desire. But I always tell them these days, don't just think institutional learning is the only way.
Right.
You have a community that you're going to come back to or going to be living someplace. That community has a need to be trained in some various ways. That community has to know what you know about life. And if you can't share how you develop yourself as a child or as you were growing up and things that you saw growing up, then you don't have community life. That's where I look, people are privileged. They missed all the things that should be important to us.
Yes. Well, it sounds like you've had the chance to work with a lot of people in your community and got to watch some of them develop. And now you're kind of at a different stage transition in your life. And so you're retired, Barbara. Are you retired? Kind of retired? Semi-retired?
I've been semi-retired for 8 years now.
Okay. Well, it seems like you're, listening to all the community work and programs you developed with other people there at Hopi, that you're kind of transitioning into a new chapter, what we'd say a new chapter in your life. And so what are you thinking or imagining is ahead for you?
Every time I have talked to people in the past, whether they be former board members or just friends that I sit on outside board positions, and I've talked to them, I always talk about where I have come from, what I have done. And they've always encouraged me to do, to write some of these things down. I have not started that, but I think what we're doing now with this podcast is going to encourage me to do that more. And this past 2-3 days, I took this big bin of pictures from very long time ago to not up to date, because the up to date are in my phone now. Now
yeah.
I need to learn how to take them out. So I think what I'll be thinking about is, how did I teach myself some of these ways of teaching others? And that's why I listen to people who would be like you, that people I meet when I've said something, what is it that sounded important that, will stay with you longer? So I'm going to need to be doing my own interviews with people, maybe people I have met in the past or throughout the years of my life, asking that question, what sits in memory with you about me? That will help me come up with some of the memory that I don't seem to have at times. So my life is after looking at those pictures, it's like, wow, I've lived through this, but I can't remember all of it. Yeah. I came across a picture of when they did our Hopi wedding, and I found one nice picture where I was fully clothed in the garments that they provided, the Hopi garments, and I'm barely remembering that. Oh. And that was in 2000. Oh gosh, I can't remember, 2007 or something like that. And we did my Hopi wedding kind of late, mm-hmm. again, because my relatives, they were debating, because coming from two different tribes, mm-hmm. my relatives from Laguna wanted to be the ones to create the event. But my Hopi relatives were strong, and I've been really close to my Hopi relatives because I live so close to them. And then marrying my husband, his family was teaching me. And so I have always wanted to go through that wedding process, but I knew I wasn't going to get the full wedding process because I'm not full Hopi. And so they compromised, and so we had a part Hopi, part Laguna event, and so that memory was really nice, that at least my Hopi in-laws and my Hopi relatives were happy, and so were my Laguna relatives. Unfortunately, my mother wasn't living at the time we went through this. So it's, but my Hopi family are the ones that took me on, and they became the family that worked with my husband's Hopi relatives to make sure the processes happened. So it was, it's things like that you think about. And I think our younger ones, because we have so many young ones that are marrying outside of their tribes,
yes.
that this is something to think about. But I feel bad when I hear somebody say, I let one side of my tribal custom go because I wanted to emphasize on this one. I feel bad because you get such greater wealth of teaching you as a person when you embrace all sides of your background. And I do have to give credit, a lot of credit, to getting on this program, Spirit Aligned Leadership Program, because if I wasn't in a safe place the first year, the first time we met, mm-hmm. I just felt safe with all my sisters and the staff that we had at that time, wow. that I was able to talk about a bad time in my life that prevented me from going back and thinking about these memories, good memories. I always have been able to think about good memories, but I have not been able to really dwell back into my childhood because it was not the greatest time of my life. But being in a safe place as our circle, I was able to bring out sexual abuse in the early years. And I think a lot of times those of us who sit in that from years ago, we don't share that quick enough. These days, you're encouraged to do that, but it's still very difficult for many people to do, because you're still feeling, was it me? Did I bring it on? Why You know, why would this have happened if I didn't have something to do with it? And so being able to express it among my sisters,
you were in a circle of other women who love you and care for you, and they've really been praying for your community right now, and I know that they hold you with such care. And I appreciate you. That takes a lot of courage, I know, and I appreciate you sharing that, because that's a message for other women.
It is, yeah. Don't hold off. Find a safe place. That's the biggest part, is finding a safe place, a safe group of people that you feel comfortable with. And I know they tell us, do one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I was not able to do that because I didn't know the person. And a counselor is not someone you usually know. So it really has to be from how you grew up. And my growing up was having relatives who cared about me and being safe with the relatives, but not safe enough to expose, you know, what was happening. So this is where I feel, if I had not been chosen for the program, I would not be where I am today, being able to really feel good about things I've done in the past, being able to share my own development of growth, and how this growth is going to keep helping others. That's one of the things that I want to make sure that whatever I say in these interviews is going to reach out to somebody.